Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Hey, welcome to the show, everybody. This is Katie Barnett with the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm thanking God for another day of being here. I am thanking God for the rejuvenation that he's put into this show, even though you wonderful listeners out there are energetic and have not changed. If anything, you guys get better. You get better for me. You make this show something that I can never get rid of because you are all my motivation for doing it bigger and better each time I leave and return. Okay, today, guys, we have a very important follow-up discussion to go through because we had an intense discussion last Wednesday about a very important topic to a very important part of our population, which is our youth, and we are not going to change that at all. So today, let me give out my shout-outs. First of all, I want to thank Kim Milton. She is an amazing, phenomenal person all the way around. She's a Black woman holding it down for her community. She's a beautiful, intense mom. She's a wonderful friend, a great sister, and she's definitely been a substantial panelist in here. She has nothing but substantial input and observations and contributions that she gives to wherever her part of the world is, as well as wherever she is here on this show panel. So I would like to thank her because definitely she's been a hell of a pillar for me in this last few years that I've been doing this and we've connected. So I want to thank him for that and for continuing to support me in sisterhood and in professionalism over here and with helping with the community. Taj Montana, that amazing hairdresser slash entrepreneur slash mom who also has sponsored my return to the show when it came out. I want to thank you because you too have been someone with extreme substantial input and support in doing for me as a fellow sister as well as to the community you serve. Thank you very much. I want to thank a couple of special guys too. I want to start with Zeddy Williams of Brooklyn, New York. He's been an activist. He has been an intricate part of the show since it launched. And, you know, when he's here or not, wherever he is, he's doing something. And he's also another amazing person to deal with. To Mr. Terry Banks out in Missouri, you are another one. Thank you very much for your help and your substantial input and the communities you serve and the friends you keep and the people that you help out with your knowledge and your input, as well as with the way you want to guide people out to for better solutions. So I want to thank all of you for that. Muhammad, when you get in, I appreciate you. And Joe, wherever you are out there, I appreciate the input that you've been having in these last few segments that you've been on and for your outstanding praise of me on the air last week. So we're going to continue that today, and I want to make sure that you understand that these topics that we have, we're not just talking about the topic itself. This is not a show for gossip or for bringing down. This is a show to talk about the problem, and by the last hour, we'd like to leave with some solutions and something better. So today, I want to dedicate this to all those kids out there that have left behind parents and loved ones because bullying got too much for you or whatever illnesses you were going through or troubles that you had without the proper village around you to help guide you out of it. Tonight is dedicated to you. Now, although this particular artist is not somebody we consider an artist or I support anymore, this particular song that he's done is a message that is for you guys that are out there that have not succumb to the sadness or to the bad stuff that is being given out to you and the images that people say. So R. Kelly's World's Greatest is going out to you. That's our dedication to let you know that that's how special you are. So, guys, tonight we're going out. We're going to be speaking on mental illness versus growing pains, part two. Now, today, the part and the we're going to be tackling is going to be the pharmaceutical barrier, and that is how much of these cases and these numbers that we're seeing in cases and the problems, how much of a role does these psychotropic drugs that are being prescribed to our children play? How big a role do they play? And we're going to get back to touching on a little bit of what we spoke about Wednesday so that we can continue on with here today. So tonight, mental illness versus growing pains, part two, the pharmaceutical barrier, going out with R. Kelly and the World's Greatest, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back here in 4 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for hanging out.
I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country. I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly. Is anybody like you who I am? Just stand up tall, I'm in the place and show me. I'm that star up in the sky, I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it, I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's against the ropes, I can feel it, I'm the world's greatest. Oh, I am a lion down in the jungle. I am a marching band. I am the people. Oh, I am a helping hand. I am a hero. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky. From that mountain peak up high, hey, I made it, and the world's greatest, and I'm that little bit of hope, when my back's up against the ropes, I can feel it, and the world's greatest.
In the ring of life, I'll reign love,
I will reign,
and the world will know that I can.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
And welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends. I am your host, KD Barnett, and we are going to go right into this second follow-up discussion. Now, for those of you who are just joining us, on Wednesday, we tackled a very important issue that's going on. Since the COVID-19 pandemic hit us, and we were forced on this major lockdown across the nation, across the globe, pretty much. What had already been an issue, but we had room to not see it, I guess, or not to have to deal with it or to address it, was the fact that a lot of people were feeling differently. Their feelings were coming out more intense, but being locked up and being inside and just the fear of this horrific virus that's going around and the major death and not being able to see your friends, that took a lot of toll, not just on adults, but definitely on our children. Now, my only problem with what was being reported or how they were going about it was with the amount of panic and fear and numbers that you're telling to the world while you're explaining that, you know, mental illness is definitely a subject that must be addressed and we've got to bring awareness to it. And it's just as important to take care of your mental health as it is your physical health. Through all that awareness and through all these major campaigns, somewhere down the line, a lot of these medical communities have forgotten that most of the time kids are going through what kids go through, and it doesn't necessarily make it a clinical diagnosis. That's the issue. Am I saying that mental illness is not a concern in our young community? Absolutely not. Just being a teenager alone and all the hormones fluctuating that way while you're mentally trying to catch up with yourself, and then now the hormones have been genetically modified for agricultural gain and profit. These kids are trying to figure out their way with twice the burden because their bodies are being told that we're developing at the age that's like 5 years before you're really there. That's already an issue. But going through regular growing pains is already a problem. The problem is that everybody's been in a quest to make mental illness problems and awareness and to make sure that the kids are not pushed off in a corner, that kids are not just to be seen and not heard. They're supposed to be heard and seen. Problem is, you forgot their kids. And if, as I brought out in part one, if all you're doing when these children have a reaction or an emotional expression is paint them with a brush that's looking for symptoms to label them with something, rather than find out what the problem is and what kind of conflict resolution we can give them, and then see if that's not enough or if it goes above and beyond what is normal growing pains or normal transitions of children or universal milestones, to know if this is something that is truly a problem that needs to be clinically diagnosed. So my issue that I was taking with these reports is that you have all these large numbers of, yes, it's important because the children more than ever are hurt, and there are teens committing suicide, and there is bullies more than ever, and these children are really acting out. And you're forgetting that part of it is no one's listening to them. All the adults are sitting down going, okay, you had a fight. You're aggressive. Let's go. You got some aggressive, you have aggression issues. What? You were yelling? You were jumping on top and having fun and laughing on the chairs? Now you have ADD. You're sad? Are you trying to kill yourself? Forgetting the fact that, you know, little Mary likes Tommy, but Tommy likes Judy, and Judy hates Mary. And that's going to make anybody sad. You like this guy, you want him to go to the prom, but he's taking your worst enemy to the prom, and you're sad. What about that qualifies you to be clinically depressed? How about I'm just damn sad? Children have been stripped of their rights to be kids nowadays because everybody is in this big race and this big rush to find a drug to give or put another notch on the clinical diagnosis belt so that everybody can understand just how much mental illness needs to be on the table and up front, and everybody must not ignore it, especially in children. Okay, so now with that being said, we all touched on, those of us that were here, we all touched on that we're in agreement that, you know, if most of the time, the parents, who, by the way, have been stripped of their rights to be parents by all this free love and free access and government interference, the power of good parenting, the power of good parent support has been ripped and fractured and pushed all over the place. So now parents are out of their mind with frustration. Parents feel like, well, if I can't be your parent, I'm going to try to be your friend. And that never works because you can't be your child's bestie. You can be open and fun and be approachable and make sure your kid knows that they can always say something to you. But at the end of the day, you are the person that has to guide them and tell them right for wrong. So being their friend is not going to cut it. But that's been taken away. So moving on to the next thing now, we have that after that, nobody is trying to hear that you know, that Charlie just got into a fight with Bobby, because you know what? Today was a day that Bobby said something a little too much, and Charlie, who normally doesn't fight, felt like knocking him out. And instead of everybody going to the guidance counselor like they did in my day, everybody's getting ready to be put in handcuffs and taken away. So now here we are feeding this big old grand stage play called the school to prison pipeline. And we're in, what, Act 43.4? So what are the kids learning? I'm not worth a damn thing. Oh, I'm sad, so they're going to give me a drug that makes me not sad, but this drug has a side effect of making me feel like I don't want to just be sad. I want to end it all and kill myself and erase myself. So today we want to find out of all of these cases, and this is going to be my question to you. We talked about the inflated rise in the number of mental illness concerns in our children. We spoke about how children younger than ever are actually considering suicide when no child from ages 6 through 10 knows what the hell suicide is and wouldn't dare use that as the go-to method to get rid of the bullying issue. But it just so happens that those that have gone through to completion with the act just happened to be on antidepressant drugs, something that was supposed to make them feel up, yet they flew up off a bridge somewhere. Or they felt like, you know, the only way to go is to get out of the way. Well, who does this? A very disturbing situation came across my desk when I was looking into the research of this thing. And the CDC published a report in September of 2019, which informed us that suicide rates in children, wait for it, ages 10 through 24 have, wait for it again, doubled in, wait for it one more time, and here's the clincher, in 42 of 50 states in the United States of America. One more again. Children ages 10 through 24 have been committing suicide at double the rate in 42 of our 50 states since the year 2007. Some states have been averaging 200 suicides a day. A day. Age 10 through 24. Which begs the question that I asked in the previous part of this discussion. With all the open awareness now, with all these plethora and myriad solutions being offered, with all this awareness being given, with all this so-called I've got you, Big Brother mentoring, suicide national prevention hotline, all this stuff, why the hell are there way more actual suicides being committed in a now open, very straightforward, aware, awakened century versus the amount of people and kids that were killing themselves or dying to depression or to bullying in an era where just the mere mention of somebody having mental illness or being depressed or suicide or anything that even remotely resembled going to see a therapist just to talk things out was considered a social taboo and nobody would speak about it openly. Why is that, huh? Why would it be that when now that you have all the help in the world, you're still losing people at twice the rate and rising rate at a younger age than you did in a time where everybody was socially oppressed? So that brings us to tonight's villain on the table. The difference between back then and now is that when they did treat children or youngsters with any type of mental concern, it was never the first choice or even a preferred choice to even consider taking out their pen and their prescription pad to send out any kid under a certain age to the pharmacy to collect any type of pill that was going to go in there to treat any kind of emotional issues. Now, with that being said, I'm not going to diminish, minimize, or dilute the very real issue of there are children out there, especially nowadays, that actually are clinically ill. My issue is that you can't figure out who that is, who truly needs these extreme measures, if you are treating everybody with the same method and the same brush. You can't sit there and say, hey, all of this art is junk, if you're not looking for the Picassos. I'm going to throw out a couple of very sad names to you at this point. Maddie Pritchett, I think is her name. Let me make sure I get that correct. Jamel Miles. Tyson Benz. Mackenzie Adams. There's a couple of others, however. I don't have them in front of me at this point, but these are all children ages 9 to 11. Hear me out, 9 to 11, that took their own lives because other kids ages 9 to 11 indulged in some horrible, aggressive, bullying behavior to the point that these children felt that their only recourse was to get rid of themselves. One, because she was black. One because he was a homosexual. One because he was thinking about maybe he was homosexual, and the other one because he was obese. But you know what they all had in common? That actually brought them to the bridge, brought them to the proverbial noose or whatever it was that took them. They were all on some sort of psychotropic prescription for treatment of end of depression. So you're giving me something to make me, when I'm feeling down, feel up. However, this thing is giving me a side effect of, if I was just being sad and that was a passing thought, now it's not a passing thought. Now it's something that I am plotting to get to bring to fruition. So I'm opening my panel early. So those of you that want to speak, if you're on the live stream, you must call the number 347-327-9967 if you care to talk to me. And you must press the number 1 if you're brand new so that I know that you want to speak. To those of you that are on the panel now, if you want to speak, and I'm going to ask the topic question this evening for you guys, please press 1 now so that I can see you. So my question tonight is, do you feel that with the numbers that they are projecting and pointing out in half of these suicides that are being reported in the CDC, do all of these inflated and increased occurrences of mental illness in our children, do you believe that the pharmaceutical prescriptions are actually playing a big role in these things happening, to make these cases the clinical certifications that they become? So I actually have a caller, and I do want to warn anyone who's feeling that a time like this is a time to play troll pranks, that you will get it big time from me this evening. So let me bring the first caller in. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, KD, this is Joe. How you doing?
Hey, Joe, how are you? And good evening, sir. So what is your answer? Do you feel that psychotropic drugs are contributing to this increase and this outrageous increase in our children?
Well, apparently so, otherwise you wouldn't be interested in it. There must be an overwhelming number of suicides in people, the kids, who have a hole in the soul, as it were, as a result of being on these drugs. Now, if only a few instances occurred in which these drugs were present and were the cause, then individually it would be of an alarm. But if a lot of kids, proportionally speaking, are being affected by these drugs, I'll even go deeper down the rabbit hole. I'll say it's done on purpose in order to make sure that the kids have a rough childhood or don't live. Because I believe America, is under attack by forces that a lot of people won't recognize, won't admit, and I think America is under attack in this particular way as part of a concerted effort to bring down America.
I at this point, I'm gonna let you know something. You know, there's a lot of things I'm not a conspiracy theorist with, but there are other things that I'm all for believing that there's a conspiracy going on. And I will tell you right now that we are in a battle of the pharmaceutical wars. Most of it because, you know, everybody's trying to get their hand in the pharmaceutical honeypot, you know. And I will say that in the beginning, when this COVID situation, you know, came out and they came up with this, you know, miracle vaccine, I definitely wasn't feeling it at all in the beginning. And they didn't really do any research. What they did was cross their fingers and turn a whole lot of people into live guinea pigs when they were trying out these inventions. Now, what I will say is when enough people and enough time went by where there were people that on certain things weren't dying, I felt a little more confident to go get vaccinated, which I did. But I'm definitely not buying that the third booster is something I'm going to get, and I'm definitely not getting a flu shot. So here we go with that, because you just couldn't leave the flu shots alone, right? You had all that ready from, 2 years ago. You didn't expect that COVID was going to come in, or whatever, if it was a man-made situation, regardless of how it got here, it was killing people. But I will say that I'm not buying that, you know, now you got to get a flu shot and a third shot. No way. So my thing is now suddenly, and somebody definitely brought that up to me, and I'm trying to remember who it was I was speaking with. Now suddenly, they've drugged up all of the adults in the world. Half of them died off to COVID. Now we have to try a new market. That's the way it's starting to appear, because the way I'm seeing it is this way. There's no way in hell that some kid who's just coming off of Barbies and just coming off of G.I. Joe trucks and little stuff understands what it means to want to get up and go find some device that will end their life to solve a problem. No child is understanding of what the hell it means to go get a blade or go take pills or go drown themselves or go hang themselves at 6 years old or 7 or 8 or even 10 years old. I'm sure they've seen some things on a superhero thing somewhere, but guess what? Do they really understand what it meant?
Mm-hmm.
And would that even be a natural reaction or desire to do because you're sad that Susie, you know, called you a name? Mm-hmm. I've seen children as young as 8 that have cried their eyes out to the worst of things, and they never thought at 6 years old that it was time to get up and go kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the drugs are making things happen in these kids' heads that wouldn't have been there before. The other thing that my question is with this is, yes, mental illness is real. We do know that there are some sociopathic children out there. Whether, you know, honestly, let me make this clear, ladies and gentlemen. The psychiatric world, they shy away from actually calling children mentally ill or sociopathic. What they say is it's a child with, I believe it's aggressive attitude with sociopathic features. Yeah, okay. So to the rest of us, you're a sociopath, okay? So this is the deal. When you have an 11-year-old child, okay,
mm-hmm.
that has been a bully with pleasure, thinking of new ways each and every day to get up and be a better bully, target of person that they have been targeting in other ways, now first you target them as the target of your bad meme campaign,
mm-hmm.
and you do it ruthlessly. Then one day, you prey on the one thing that girl wants, and that is to be a part of the popular kids' clan. And then you give her that olive branch, but you don't mean it because you have another ulterior motive underneath your belt. So that would be, oh, come on. You know what? I was only teasing you earlier. I don't mean all that stuff. I'm not really that mean in real life. I just play a bully in TV. Come on to my party. No problem. Meanwhile, this child is all happy, run home, tell their mom, they really do like me, mom. She apologized. She did all this other stuff. They go to a sleepover. This child is asleep. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, the mean girl went into her kitchen, pulled out a pot from underneath the stove or in the dish drain or hanging on, whatever it is, turned on the sink, filled that pot up with water, put it on the stove, waited for the stove to turn on, wait for the water to boil, took that hot pot, brought it back into the room where everybody was sleeping, and poured it on the face of the sleeping girl that she had been bullying all year and tricked into coming. And her mother said, kids will be kids. It wasn't that serious. It was a bad thing. That is not a normal prank for a normal kid. That's sociopathic.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking. Yeah,
we talked about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is people like that need not to have any type of shadows they can hide in. And if the society continues to keep on looking for the next label, or the next drug to assign, they're going to continue to miss sociopathic kids that burn little girls with water, or 6 little kids that make a video of skinning and kicking the hell out of a kitten.
Well, there are demon seeds as a result of, I guess, who knows, maybe the twisted DNA. I think it's part of human nature for people to, for certain people to stand out front, to become bullies, because you have a bully in every school at every age group. But for a bully to be, as you're talking about, to progress to the point where what they want to do is not just hurt or demean, but they really want to do damage, and maybe they're not even cognizant of the fact that they're doing damage. Maybe they just felt that the scalding water would just create the pain that they're inflicting on their victim, but they didn't know that it would ruin the person's face. Or even if they did know, they didn't care. So at that particular point, you have to say either that's a demon seed, or the home life of that child who's a bully is horrendous. And as a result of that home life of being with either a mother and a father or one parent who's absent from the home, creating that particular attitude in that child where that child wants to strike out, maybe against the parents but can't do it against the parents. So now the parent, that kid, takes it out on another kid. And that's a vicious cycle which has been happening throughout mankind. And getting back to the pharmaceutical industry, they're probably aware of this. For them to allow physicians to prescribe psychotropic drugs for kids and to see those results of kids turning into suicides and either not saying much about it and certainly not doing much about it, they're complicit in this. They know about it. I believe they know about it. I believe not only do they know about it, it's probably done on purpose.
And they're slapping a warning sign, you know, a little waiver on the bottom. They're doing these little PSA commercials about the drug because what they're doing is they're making sure they put all the great marketing things on the front page, and they're making sure that you hear about those side effects with music and, you know, a real quick toward the last 3 seconds of the commercial, making
right.
sure that they just barely fulfilled their legal minimum and letting you know, there is this. Well, side effects include, swelling of the face, and you could die, could risk a stroke or death. Well,
right.
How the hell are you doing that if you're trying to help my heart?
Mm-hmm.
You're giving me the greatest heart medicine, but it's going to give me a stroke and die? Let me take my next caller, Joe. Hang on there, okay?
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Paulie. You're on the air.
Hey, Katie. How you doing this evening? It's Terry.
Oh, hi, Terry. You're a little loud, sweetheart. Like, it's really booming from your end.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, much better. And you already got that thunderous voice, so let's go. All right.
Yeah, I'm trying. Wait, let me move my microphone back.
All right.
Okay, how about now? What's the volume
yep.
like?
Yeah, much
yeah,
better.
Okay.
Okay, so the question, how much of a role do you think that psychotropic drugs are playing in two things? One, the number of actual cases that are happening, and two, to the aggression and the rise in aggression and bullying behavior that these children are showing these days.
I think they have a great deal to do with it. Just like I was saying last week, you know, my opinion is that I think the pharmaceutical companies are targeting children. I think they recognize that children are going to be a guaranteed consumer, because if you get stuck on that thought and that ad when you're young, you're going to tend to follow that pharmacy company all the way through your life. Let me just give you a quick example. If you think about Band-Aid, for example, I remember when I was young, the commercial went, "I am stuck on Band-Aid because Band-Aid
yeah.
stuck on me."
Yes.
So most of us heard that when we were kids, and to this very day, the first brand that we go and get from the store when we have an owie is a Band-Aid. So that shows you, even when you're young, you can get that thought stuck in your mind, that branding gets to you. So I just think some of the pharmaceutical companies are using, you know, these marketing campaigns to target children, and many of them are unethical. Like, for example, you're telling your parents of children, you're trying to convince them that their son or their daughter has a mental disorder or a physiological problem, and that they need to solve that problem. So they highlight, you need to solve this problem, and we mm-hmm. have what you need to fix it, which is a drug. So now you have these children on these drugs from the time they're young. And, of course, that's really messing with your mental status because your mind is actually still forming and growing. You know, you're in the fourth grade, you're in the fifth grade, your mind is really still growing, and yet now you're putting these substances in it. So it's causing more harm than good. So I think the pharmacy companies have a great deal to do with these kids' problems today because they didn't happen when we were kids. The drugs that were out when we were kids, they didn't offer them to us. The only drug I can remember as a kid was Flintstone chewables, and that was a vitamin.
You know, but the way
that they marketed to us, the way that they marketed it to us was to use our favorite cartoon. So the pharmacy companies have a way to be able to get into a young person's mind through these commercials. So you're targeting kids by using things that children relate to, cartoons, you're using certain characters, you're using certain things that you take from things like Sesame Street, you're putting them into ads, and then you're putting them on television saying, are you unhappy? Are you sad? Is somebody messing with you? Well, take this particular drug and it'll solve your problems. So yeah, I definitely am against the pharmacy companies. My personal opinion is that they're not really trying to resolve anyone's issues, adult or child. They're thinking about the billions of dollars that can be made by you buying that drug and putting it into your body. So I'm not one that's really a pharmaceutical lover. I'm just not.
Oh, I'm not for it at all. I'll tell you that right now. I'm all for kids expressing, like you and I and Joe last week, we all laughed and joked about, you know, like the only treatment we needed to get ourselves in shape on certain things was, you know, our mother or father's tanning our backside or something at some point, and then sitting down and explaining why they did. And as Joe pointed out, you know, what is the deal with, like, after you have to handle the business with your kids, that you sit and you actually cry with them, or you sit with them and explain why this had to happen and what you're doing it for, because, you know, you could have been hurt. This wasn't the best of you. And that is the difference between what abuse is versus disciplining with love. You know, like, I had a debate with someone who was saying that you don't have to hit your children to get a point across. Now, that's true. If you're picking up a bat or a crowbar, or you're just smacking them up, you know, just that's your way of talking. Yeah, I can understand that being an issue. But if your child is 3 years old or two, and you said, oh, honey, don't go over there by that light socket, you know, don't go near the stove, and they're walking in, and you calling them out is not going to stop the danger in time. You have to get up and tap them or something to let them understand that this could have been an issue, or you have to give them some shock right now so that they can get the message. You're not trying to kill them. You're not trying to make sure that they, you know, they're maimed or anything. But as far as this pharmaceutical situation is, they're not trying to hear the growing pain aspect of it. Nobody wants to take the time out to be that other person because, you know, they took away the parents' right to do any shape and forming without interference, and then they turned around and said, now the monsters that we've created, we don't want to deal with it. And since this is on our time now, because you're in school hours, your mom and dad can't do anything, so this is the way we're going to handle it on our turf, and then we're going to send you home worse than ever, and we're going to tell your parents they better do this, and if they don't do it, then there's going to be other repercussions. And that is how we keep this stupid, vicious cycle going. Now, I don't have an issue with, like I said, realizing that there are some children out there who need to be treated with extremes. Sociopathy has an actual issue with the brain that turns them. There's something missing from them. They lack empathy. They lack a conscience at some point. So that's some real issues. They can mock emotions. So that means they know how to mimic being sad, being loving, but they don't feel it. They're not really connected to it. That's an illness. But a kid that's crying because, you know, the date they wanted didn't come to them and they chose their enemy is not crying because it's a clinical issue. That needs to be labeled and drugged. And for me, most of these reports that they're coming up with, not the suicide reports, I'm talking about the amount that they're saying is this clinical existence in the first place. I believe, one, most of it is the growing pains and not clinical pains, and two, those that are clinical have been exacerbated by this unnecessary prescription drug. that they've been giving these children. And that's my feeling. And definitely the extreme intensity of bullying and the contents of things that these younger kids are doing, definitely, I believe, is modified behavior from these drugs. And the suicides, definitely, without a doubt, is solely contributed to that. To younger children actually going through with it. I can't really say that about a 16 or a 17-year-old. I will say that if they've been able to, you know, keep a little stamina and not really go through it for some time and then finally one day they can't, I get it. But 16 and 17-year-olds have a little more understanding of what suicide is. But any young child that's committing suicide, there's no way you're not going to convince me that you're going to convince me that it's not the drugs. Remember, anyone who wants to speak, you can't do it from the live stream. You've got to call the number. So again, the number to call in to the studio is 347-327-9967, and then you have to press 1 so the switchboard can let me know that you are trying to get a question in. All right. There is another caller. Guys, give me a sec, okay? Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air. Hello?
Did that person press 1?
Yeah, they did.
Maybe they went to get a sandwich.
Okay, Joe. All right. So, Terry, I'm going to ask you, do you agree with what I just said, or what is your feedback on what I just said with regards to the exacerbation of the numbers and the suicides happening?
Well, again, you got to look at what you said. You said that each of those young people, those beautiful young innocent souls that took their own lives, they all were on some type of a psychotropic drug. So I think back to myself at that age. I'm sure you do, and I'm sure that Joe would do too. When you think about when you're 9, okay, 8 years old, I was in the third grade. 9, I'm in the fourth. 10, I'm in the fifth. Killing myself simply was not anywhere in my mind at no kind
exactly.
of point, period.
Exactly.
No, I don't care. No. Look, I grew up in that, at those years, 8, 9, and 10, I was in St. Paul, Minnesota. This was in the late 60s into the very early 70s. And at that time, Minnesota was like 98% white. Here I am, this little black kid, you know, I'm in this pretty much all white school, 99% white, didn't get teased, didn't get called out of my name, didn't get chased home, didn't have any bullies. I mean, I enjoyed myself. I had a good time. So I was thinking about being a baseball player and how much I liked this certain girl, right? So it just wasn't on my mind. So how are these young people at the same age at a point where they're actually thinking, I want to kill myself, not really even understanding the finality of killing themselves?
Exactly.
That's the thing about it. Like, you really don't this isn't, okay, I'm going to kill myself, but then I'm going to be like the cartoon character, Sylvester, and I'm going to wind up in the next scene still alive. It's not that. So they're not even understanding the totality of killing themselves. So what is going on in these kids' minds that makes them think that's the only way I can resolve my issue? The drugs had an absolute effect on that. My way of dealing with bullies back then, even though I didn't face any, my friends' ways of dealing with bullies that I did see, sometimes you just got to go face them. Heads up.
Yep.
Look, I'm sick
yep.
of you. We need to go ahead and throw these. I'm tired. You know, you just get to the point where, like, I'm going to fight you back. That was the answer. That was the drug that you used to tell the bully, enough is enough. You actually fought him back. We had parents. We had uncles, aunts, older brothers, and siblings that would take us to that bully and get you in a circle and make you fight him. Like, you just basically had to let them know, you're not going to keep on messing with me my whole life. It's not going to go down like that. But nowadays, as we said last week, the societal labels have changed. And now kids don't have anyone that they can go to really explain or talk to about their issues. They keep it to themselves. They're looking at it totally through these devices, and they're thinking
mm-hmm,
that the
mm-hmm.
device is how they should deal with the issue. But the
exactly.
device is inanimate. It doesn't think. It doesn't breathe. It can't give you an answer. So I'm thinking, again, like I said last week, if you would get back to actual adults getting into the children's lives and actually helping these children through talking to them, through helping them work through their problems as opposed to listening to the drug company say, hey, just give them this pill and they'll be okay. I think you can begin to resolve the issue. So what you're saying is right on. What we're all saying is right on. The pharmacy companies have got to get out of the way. But the reason why it's not going to happen here in America, at least, is because it's a billion-dollar industry. I'm talking billions that you can't really even count. You think about all of the laboratories and the billions of dollars they're making. They don't want to give up that bottom line profit. They got stockholders they've got to be obliged to. They're obligated. We got to keep this money coming in. And again, who is that target that will keep that money coming in for us? It's the young people, because they're going to be around for a long time. Suicide, of course, not included. But you're leading them up to that point because you're constantly putting these ads out there that are telling someone, if you take X drug, it can help you alleviate a symptom. Well, when I was growing up, talking through the situation usually could help you alleviate it. You didn't need a drug. You just kind of talk your way through it. You figure out how you can resolve it. And if it came down to where, hey, this person's messing with me, I'm going to let them know I'm tired of it, you put the fists up and you fight it out. And usually that would help resolve that issue once and for all.
Thank you. Let me bring my next caller in, Terry. Hang on. Don't go anywhere. Okay. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Kim. Great discussion, everyone. Good evening.
Hi, Kim. Thank you. I'm glad to hear from you. Okay. So the two-part question on the table. Do you feel that pharmaceutical drugs are playing a big role in the reported cases of mental illness or the rise in mental illness concerns with our kids? And do you also feel that they play a role in the exacerbated way that our kids are behaving these days, the bullying and the suicide as well?
Yes, I agree that those, as the gentleman just said, that it's all about the dollar, because the United States as a country is not putting the children first or the youth first. You know, they started taking gym out of the schools where you couldn't have recess and you couldn't go to gym. So the kids couldn't run out whatever hormones they have in their body. So that stuff just stayed, and then it's exacerbated by these drugs that they're getting. So childhood today, as, you know, everybody's already said, is not the childhood that we had in the past. If you were feeling frustrated, you go outside, you ride your bike, you use up all those hormones that are in your body and you get that adrenaline going, and you the body kind of heals itself of whatever you're going through. But now with children sitting inside behind the computer on the video game, they don't get to do the natural thing for their body that you know, children need to go through during those ages. And like you said, the foods that we eat, they have hormones and stuff in it that's exacerbating, you know, everything. So we just, in this country, and I understand we're a capitalist country, but the dollar is first and everybody else is second, and the children are definitely last on the list, and we're not thinking about the children being our future. So I agree with what everyone is saying about the, you know, we think about giving drugs first because parents are working two jobs. Parents weren't working two and three jobs years ago. So you had time to raise your family. Now people don't have time to raise a family. They pop the baby out, give it to somebody, and they keep moving. And that's not a way to raise a society. So I just think we need to slow down, take a look at what we're doing, and get the pharmacies out of our pocket, get, you know, all these things that are constantly trying to make us spend, and then you don't have any money because the jobs are paying low. And then you try to raise a child off that. You just can't do it. It's just not feasible. So I agree with what everybody said. In addition to the children need to go outside and play and run around and use the hormones that they have in their body to self-heal.
Yeah, and that dopamine is missing in a lot of kids too. You know, the vitamin D deficiency from the lack of sunlight. And like you said, I believe too that being social also, you know, helps produce some healthy hormones inside, so everybody wants to be around. Like you said, listen, I have I'm raising my last three. And when I tell you that one is 16 and I have twin 14-year-olds, and I'm looking at them that they'll be sitting in a two-cushion love seat, and the person will be sitting in the matching recliner next to them. And they'll literally be talking to each other biotech right next to each other. And I'm pretty old school. So I'm looking and I'm going, what is it with you guys? Today, as a matter of fact, my daughter and I, she's about to turn 17. So we're supposed to be talking about her her party. And I'm sitting there. She was like, Mom, just make sure you don't bring any of your ancient friends to the party. You know, it's something we're doing, right? And I'm laughing and I'm like, ancient friends? You should be lucky that we have any friends, because if you didn't bring any older people, you wouldn't know how to party. I said, your generation is the only generation I know. They're the only generation I know that has the most vulgar music, the most monotonous music. There's no rhythm. When there is rhythm, your own people are not even dancing at these parties. They're standing around with their devices, texting and bopping their heads in place. So I'm sitting here like, what is going on? This is like Stepford Wives in reverse. You know, it's almost robotic. It's almost a control situation. But one of the things that disturbs me most, and, you know, Kim, thank you. I know that if you got to leave, I really appreciate you taking the time to step in. But one of the things that disturbs me the most is the type of bullying and the intensity of things that are happening out here. The methods of bullying that this generation is using definitely is not a normal way of developing from normal anger. The anger is at a different level. The methods of revenge that they use is something that we used to get entertained with by looking at Godfather movies. These weren't real things that people actually thought about and did as kids.
There was something that Perry said that made me kind of leery. He was talking about how the there isn't much assistance from the schools with regards to bullying. I think there's, I don't know how prolific it is, but I think it's probably too much. And here's what I mean by that. When I was growing up, the best way to take care of a bully was just punch him in the nose. And I guarantee you, nobody ever came back when you smacked a bully around. They never came back.
Yeah, because the idea, we all know what the issue with a bully is. Every one of us knows. We know that bullies are just kids that are scared and just make sure that they put the tough face on before anybody realizes that first. And they go after the person that's the smallest, the weakest looking to them, or the most easily comparable in their mind. So, yeah, we got that part. My thing nowadays is the gadgets that they have access to when they get angry, this psychotropic-induced rage
right.
that they're in. And you're right, Terry, and you're right, Joe. There is no more school support. Because
No. What I'm saying is too much of it. Because what are they doing now? What are they teaching? They're saying, do not hit the bully back. Talk to the guy.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, get out of here.
That's what I'm saying.
Listen, I give my kids this rule. You try to tell a teacher twice. You try your best to talk it out or avoid it twice, two times. But just like in baseball, third strike, you out.
Yeah.
And I try to give the staff members in the school the opportunity to do their damn job. Okay?
And that's
so
the
that
thing.
I don't try to go down there right away and go, hey, why does this happen? I try to tell my kids. I ask my children, did you tell the teacher? No, I didn't. Well, then if you didn't tell the teacher, how is the teacher going to be able to do something about it? When they come back and tell me that they told the teacher and the teacher didn't do anything, I said, did you try again? Yeah. Yeah, we did. Third time, then do what you got to do and the rest is on me. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. Well, firstly, I don't think most kids are going to go and tell the teachers. That would make the kids snitch. But
that's such a stupid concept.
The thing is, and then when the parents start saying, "Don't hit the bully back," try to understand the bully, and and then offer assistance to the school counselors. But by the time their particular plan even starts to work, the poor kid is beat up from freshman year to high school. So the best thing to do, in my opinion, is just first time. Some kid wants to bully you, smack the piss out that kid. And then that kid isn't coming back. And now if you want to get in trouble with the principal for why did you hit that child back, well, you know, I remember when I was growing up, there was no such thing as he started it. Both of you got in trouble. And so be it. So both of you got in trouble, but that kid isn't going out to the schoolyard next lunch period to look you up.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Tim, I know that you you have a limited time with me, so is there anything that you need to say you'd like to add on to this before you log off? I think she had to log off already. Okay. That's okay. Thanks, sweetheart, for your participation. So, Terry, we're back to you. It's Vanderbilt Ferguson.
All right. Yeah, I just want to be sure, Joe, if you were affiliating me with saying kids should be involved with the schools and bullying, no. I don't think schools have any, you know, for me, I'm going to tell you, like I told you, how I grew up in my generation. I can only speak for my era, just like any of us can. We didn't do anything in school to go tell anybody we were being bullied or somebody was bullying us. We handled it on our own. So that means either your older cousins, your older uncles, your moms, your dad, somebody else would help you get involved to be able to go after that bully. So it wasn't a thing where you felt, okay, I got to kill myself because this person is picking on me. Now, for me, I mean, I grew up playing, you know, sports, physically aggressive sports. So even though I wasn't the tallest kid, the kids in my neighborhood did not bully me because they had already known it. You know, he's pretty tough. This guy's not going to let you bully him. But I knew people in the neighborhood who were bullied. But the way that it was handled is eventually you had to just get in a circle and fight that person that was bullying you. So you're basically letting them know, I'm not going to continue to let you bully me. What's happened today is it's all changed because everything has gone to this inanimate object as the device that people are using to bully. So there's physically nobody that you go to. So nowadays, the kids are actually interpersonally, they're socially deficient. They don't really know how to react to each other face-to-face, word-to-word, but they're masterfully, inanimately efficient. So they can go on social media and, boy, they whooping your butt on social media.
Yep.
But stand with you toe-to-toe, eye-to-eye, mm-hmm. in a mm-hmm. field with nobody there. Like, I used to always want to get somebody, let's just go to the football field. Let's go across the street. Like, let's go where it's just me and you and nobody can see what's happening. That's when you let the bully know, I'm not afraid of you. You see, but it, because you're not willing to face each other eye to eye and face to face, you're now doing it through these inanimate objects. There's no other human being that can actually help you or intervene with you to help you resolve your issue. So kids are feeling that they're isolated and alone, but it's because you're on that device and you're not allowing anybody else to know what's going on with you so that they can help you. So
yeah.
Unless the young people can find a way just to, I don't know if we can change. I just think the generations get to the point where we're reaching the end days. So it's going to get to the point where you're just never going to be able to get young people to stop using these objects like they're using. Like you gave your example. If your kids are sitting next to each other and rather than talk to each other verbally, they're texting, that's the sign, again, that we're in the last days. Something is terribly wrong. Not with your kids personally, but the whole idea of why are you talking to this person through this object when they're right there
yeah.
with you.
Like,
I don't get it. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't saying that you were
recommending it, Perry. I was just saying that you brought it up, and that I was thinking it reminded me of what's going on today.
Yeah. Oh, another thing, too. Let me just make one more correction, Joe. It's actually Terry with a T, not Perry with a P.
Oh, that's Perry. Okay, thanks.
Oh, I didn't right. hear that. Okay. Terry, yeah, absolutely. I want to respond to a listener that just inboxed me. Kevin, he spoke on, he read a story that reported that, you know, a girl was only 16 years old, and she was arrested and in jail 3 times. Now, I'm not sure. Kevin, I know that your audio gear ain't so great, so do me a favor. Clarify to me, was that girl a problem child that got arrested, or was it just that she did something and they automatically labeled her for jail? But either way, that's definitely a catalyst problem that we have going on here. It's like nobody wants to get to the bottom of regular old conflict with kids anymore. Everybody's rushing off. Everybody's aggravated. Nobody wants to be in the schools, but yet they're not leaving. A whole bunch of things are going on, and these children need to be She was a problem child active with gangs. Yeah, that's another issue. And here's the deal, though. Even with that, did the gang activity happen because she had issues and that were normal growing pain issues and no one listened? Or was she just a person that had an appetite for violence and being a pain in the ass? You know, that is the issue there. The problem is that a lot of these kids, if they're being told, hey, I'm sad, I'm going to go see somebody in private, hopefully get to talk, but that person in private is telling them, well, you know what? You got to go home to your mother. Have your mother bring you to somebody to talk to and make sure that they sign a letter stating that you're not a danger to yourself or others to come back. I've had when I was PTA president for my children's elementary school, I remember a parent having a fourth grader. Now, yeah, Terry, you can match up the ages again. Okay, so yeah, see, sixth grade, you're in the first grade, second,
yeah,
third, fourth.
You're in the fourth grade. Yep, you're in the fourth grade at nine.
Right, so about 9 years old, you're in the fourth grade, okay? So this child, now I get the teacher needing to report, you know, something like that was being said. But the problem is that the way that they are reporting this or what they hear when it comes to certain types of children, let's just say that. It's, oh my goodness, that's such an aggressive thought. So apparently this was the story. A fourth grade student comes to a fourth grade teacher and tells the fourth grade teacher that she's sad and she feels like, you know, she should just take a knife and hurt herself. Didn't say kill herself, she said hurt herself. I guess cutting or whatever the case is. Now, the first reaction, in my opinion, that teacher should have done is realize the kid is 9 years old, and obviously for something that extreme to come out of their mouth, something had to have happened. So rather than get to the bottom of what happened to cause that child to say that thing, and then figure out based on what the incident was, whether that was something that was said to get attention to the problem so they could talk, or does this person really have that tendency or that desire? So, you know, the person's mom was called up. The girl's mother was called up to school. Now, mind you, here's my issue. Here's a student that's an A student, is always happy and bubbly, is always involved with all the creative arts, you know, and never had a problem. And then this one day, when that very teacher observed that there was something going on with that child, a couple of friends, and one of the friends in the circle was a class troublemaker. So rather than get to the bottom of what took place and coax the kid into talking, well, I saw that, you know, today you were with Samantha, and what happened with Samantha? You know, did that have anything to do with why you're feeling the way you feel? They immediately decided that just based on what the nine-year-old said, it was time to run to the principal and tell the principal how worried you were that this child was going to kill themselves or had some tendencies or some aspirations to hurt themselves. Not find out what happened. Not find out why did anything go wrong today, because an adult with any kind of damn common sense would understand that children say things when they're frustrated and they're out of what they feel were the great solutions in their head, and it didn't work. So rather than say, you know, I give up, or I'm sad that this happened, she said the one thing that would get this teacher, that's supposed to be her favorite teacher, and the teacher had labeled her like the favorite teacher's pet, she figured that she would get that one-on-one special attention from this teacher, and instead this teacher turned her into, well, you need to go home and you need to go see a licensed professional. And this principal tells the mom, when the mother said, nothing of that sort is going to happen. I'm going to take my child home and I'm going to talk to my child, and then I'm going to take my child. We have our pastor as a counselor. No, I understand that, but it can't be just your clergy. It has to be somebody with a license in psychotherapy or in psychiatry, a licensed clinician, to say that she's no longer a danger to herself or to others. So you force the kid to leave school for a whole day. because you didn't bother to get to the bottom of the first most obvious thing that adults would do when they hear something like this from a kid. Then you tell them that their religious beliefs is not good enough for your taste. Then you say you're forced to go see a clinician, and you're forced to bring a letter that we have to put in your file in order for you to return back to school. Just exactly how is that not fitting into what we are saying at this point about everybody trying to label and tag our children and peg it somewhere? Because growing pains and kids just being freaking kids are no longer a part of the equation anymore. Are you with me?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I didn't, you know, cut you off or I didn't interrupt you. Look, what you just said was a misdiagnosis on the part of the person who supposedly was there to resolve the issue. When she talked about, when the 9-year-old said, I think I'm going to hurt myself with a knife. Okay, remember there's this thing called cause and effect.
Exactly.
So that's what you missed. You missed step one. Okay, what's the cause of this little 9-year-old saying she wants to hurt herself with a knife? Now, had she said, well, it's because I like Billy and Billy told me I'm fat. Okay, now we know you don't need your clergy to be involved, nor do you need to go see a psychiatrist, because we found out what the cause was. Your feelings were hurt because someone you liked said they didn't like you. So now we can deal with the fact that you want to hurt yourself with a knife in a more rational and normal way. The first thing we can do is to let you know you don't need a knife. You're a beautiful young lady, so you certainly don't need to hurt yourself with a knife. And then you start to work through the issue without even getting to the point of trying to involve some psychiatrist. Look, I'm going to tell you again, I think that the pharmaceutical companies are they're a big business, and they have no place in the academic world. They have no place in academia. So what's happening now is you got pharmaceutical companies that are actually trying to go into schools and trying to kind of market their way into the schools. Let me give you an example. You see coloring books nowadays. They got medicine-related stuff in them, right? They got corporations that are advertising to children by, like, using logos, you know, placing them right in front of the children. So if you think about this, by the time you're in the first and second grade, you already done seen, like, 150, 200 logos come across your brains that deal with what you should take for something. So again, as soon as you start to face these issues with the fact that you can't deal with whatever little 8, 9, 10-year-old problem you're dealing with, your brain is subliminally thinking, ooh, let me use that logo drug I saw, okay, or let me tell my mom to go buy that logo drug I saw, because that's going to help me resolve my issue. So it's a reverse effect, where you're thinking that the pharmacy company is trying to do something on behalf of the children, but the fact is it works against the children, because you're not allowing the natural nature of growing pains to take place with that child. You know, we all went through it. That's what I'm saying. We're speaking now. We don't need doctor's degrees and degrees to know this, because we're in our, like, 50s. We went through it. So that's all the wisdom and experience I needed. I went through it. I was 8. I was 9. I was 10. I went through it. I went through people who yell at you, call you out your name, or you're too black, you're too white, you're too gray, you're too fat, you're too skinny, your ears are too small, your feet are too big. I mean, you go through it. But not once did anybody that I know of in my life, I'm going to go run and get some drug because they said my feet are too big. You know, it just wasn't resolved that way. The psychiatric medications that are out here now are being driven towards these young people. Their parents are being told, if your kid's having a tantrum when he's 9 months old, maybe he needs some drugs. I mean, and this is the evil of drugs and these pharmacy companies. I mean, again, as I told you, I'm not for drugs. I mean, you really have to put me in a position where I got to be convinced that if I don't die, I'm going to die if I don't take that drug. That's the only way I'm likely to want to take it, you know, because I just see the side effects that the drugs have are often worse than what's supposed to be helping you resolve your issue in the first place. So that's how this drug abuse happens to begin with. You tell a person, hey, I know you're hurting. Take this drug. This is going to help with your pain. Okay, the person says, okay, I'll take it. But it's such a psychotic drug that now the person's hooked on it. Now they want it all the time. So when they can't get it, now you're going to get the after effects, which is now this kind of erratic behavior. So if you're doing this with young people, what do you think you're getting as they get older? Erratic behavior. So that's what happens by the time these kids get to high school, is that their minds are just not quite where they should be between 14 and 18. But if you've been pumping them up with drugs since they were 8 and 9, okay, that's 6 years of using that drug has definitely changed that kid's mindset, period.
Absolutely. 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 And I will say that the funny thing is about the story that I just explained to you, it's funny that you mentioned that Tommy called me fat situation, because it turns out that what made that 9-year-old girl say that intense statement was because she liked a boy who happened to like a girl that didn't like her. You see,
I had no idea. You see what I'm saying? I had no idea that's what it was. But that's what I'm saying. That's the simplicity of it. It's such a normal childhood issue. Like girls will get called fat, boys will get called ugly. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, it's like every girl knew, how do you hurt a boy's feelings? Call him ugly. And boy, it would hurt your feelings so bad, because you thinking you handsome, you know, you thinking you a little bitty, you know, a Sidney Poitier looking dude, you know, and the girl says, oh, I don't like you ugly. Oh, your feelings be so hurt, you know. But again,
skinny,
growing,
you know,
but you're skinny. You have no muscles. You know, in other words, the things that they would hurt you with were not things that, as boys, well, okay, I'm gonna go and get a knife and cut myself, you know, or I'm about to go jump off the top of the stadium. I mean, it's a different era. Like I said, your feelings get hurt. You figure out a way. Okay, I got to deal with the fact that my little feelings just got hurt. But suicide never was the answer. Like, we never even put that in my mind. I'm going to kill myself because the girl I like doesn't like me. We just thought, okay, well, oh, man, I sure wish she did. But, oh, well, it's other fish in the sea. You know, so we found ways to just say, okay, that's not going to happen with her. But, you know, it's some girl out there somewhere likes me. So it was the same thing with that young 9-year-old. We would let her know, well, even if Tommy doesn't like you, believe me, there's somebody else out here that likes you. They just may be a little bit scared to tell you. But if you hurt yourself with that knife, how would you ever find that beautiful person? And are we right? Yeah, you're right. Okay, so let's not think about hurting ourselves if somebody says they don't like us. Can we agree on that? And again, you're beginning to help her or help him understand that harming yourself because someone says something negative about you is just simply unacceptable. It's not the way you deal with your issue. You're a beautiful person. Never should you hurt yourself because somebody else says they don't like you or they think you don't look a certain way. That's just their own opinion. And you don't hurt yourself because of someone else's opinion. But those words are, again, not something that are readily available to kids because kids aren't talking to adults about the problem. So they're just immediately looking at what social media is saying and doing and trying to use that as the way to fix the problem. So if social media says you should hurt yourself if somebody's doing this and that, now you got people doing it. You said it last week where somebody was watching something on TikTok and did something about something ignorant, hit a disabled teacher. Well, I know last week you said that somebody on TikTok or something showed somebody hitting a 62-year-old teacher. And it's like, but
yeah,
what
would
cause...
Yeah, that was Muhammad. He brought that up. Yes,
yeah,
he brought that up.
Yeah. So what would cause that? Like, what would cause young people to want to do something like that? It's because of the amount of time you've invested, the amount of energy you have invested into looking at this inanimate object and all of the sinister behavior that comes through that object. So it's like anything. If you keep watching something long enough, eventually it's going to have an effect on you, whether positive or negative. So if you're constantly feeding your mind with this negativity and this foolishness that's coming through this social media outlet, eventually you're going to buy into the fact that you should do something like that too.
Absolutely, Terry. And Carla, I see you there. Let me just follow up with you. Absolutely. One of the things that, you know, I'm trying to get my thought bearings here while I'm trying to collect this, the next caller, but absolutely. It's, when you was just speaking on how, like, you know, this teacher could have talked to this person and asked what happened and then, you know, say, oh, please, you're beautiful. Don't they have a checklist like before? Don't you? This is the perfect teachable moment. This is the time where I remember that. My I think I brought it up last week. I had an English teacher that wouldn't let anything mess up my potential. He wouldn't let anything mess up my personality. He wouldn't let nothing get in the way of me being the best person I could be, despite the fact that my mom was poor, despite the fact that I came with less than perfect brand name anything, despite the fact that my mom was passive and scared of everybody. So I had to deal with my own bullies. I didn't have any mother that came down and was, you know, ready to cut up if she had to. That's what I do for my children, possibly because of what I went through growing up. But they do have to go through it. They have to go through it because there's no such thing as actually overcoming something if you don't face it and get through the problem. You're not overcoming anything if you skipped around it. You never handled it. You never dealt with it. So how would you know? And the one thing that I was thinking of and couldn't connect at the moment is suicide was never the choice. And like you said about the person getting knocked out, knocking an old disabled person in the head, little kids with no issues or children with no help from anything chemically inducing, don't find that a desirable prank. Who gets pleasure in that type of prank? Throwing a window at your neighbor's car, throwing eggs at a door, ringing a bell and running off, something like that. Those are things that kids think of. They're more nuisances than they are dangerous. So yes, clearly we have to understand that this psychotropic nonsense are a chemical warfare pretty much on normal development. There's a caller coming in. I want to make sure the time doesn't wind down before they get an opportunity. Hang on, sir. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. It's Kevin of Staten Island.
Hey, Kev, how are you?
Doing good.
Long time I'm here. Okay. So what's your take on tonight's discussion?
Well, you know, one thing I could tell you about the dangers of social media, I remember when AOL came out back in the 90s for the first time, and the biggest problem was, you'd be surprised how many adults go online, they pretend to be teens, they talk with other teens, you don't know who you're talking to, and you don't even know what they're saying. And that's why, you know, I wish teens would be a little bit more cautious about social media, but I wish they would stop wasting all the time on social media.
Absolutely. Catfishing is a big deal. It's a big deal because it goes beyond just pranking. And that definitely is going to inflict some trauma on these kids who's already a mess as it stands. You know, and we were speaking about that last week. Like the things that used to be in place for the government, the little touch-up and fine-tunes of protection for your kids and preserving their innocence, that's been long gone. The FCC is really relaxed on what they're allowing on to see on TV. If it's not about inside trading or some war situation, they don't really care. There's no regulations anymore. There's no restriction on how late into the evening you can air something or broadcast on TV. You know, on our day when we got up by 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, all you saw was please stand by for 3 hours. You saw snow and you saw please stand by. And then the next voice that you saw or the next face you saw was that big head guy that did the editorials for WPIX 11. That's in New York. I don't know about the rest of the states. But he always ended his editorials with, what's your opinion? We'd like to know. Then you knew that the first morning lineup on TV was about to come on. But after I Love Lucy, the late show, then they called it the late, late show. And the late, late show was like 12 o'clock, I think, which is considered early nowadays. But everything that was in place to help these kids develop skills and conflict resolution, all of the ways that, you know, the kid could skin their knee, you know, proverbially speaking, and here comes their favorite teacher to build them up again. You know, And they, you know what? Tommy is stupid. I'm not going to care about crying anymore. Or you know what? That girl will like me. I'm not going to start crying over Kelly anymore. And they can get up and get back to their life. That's not happening anymore.
But
everybody,
you know,
dropped the ball. Everybody dropped the ball. Go ahead, Kevin. What were you going to say, hon?
But, you know, one thing that starts with the household, you have to understand that you don't always get along with somebody. It doesn't mean you don't like each other. We just don't get along. We have different interests. And this
are
is what people have to realize.
Kids?
Yes.
Let me tell you something, and that's going to be one of my upcoming topics in the very near future. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to do it for Wednesday or Friday. But there's a lot of misconceptions that society puts down on parents. And parents, we're under this unrealistic veil that, you know, dealing with the hardest damn job in the world. Okay? The hardest job in the world, while it can also be the most fulfilling, is being a parent. But I will say this, okay? They have a lot of misconceptions that they force you to deal with or not say because it's politically incorrect, or some fool with a clipboard who probably never had a kid a day in their life is sitting up there going, well, that doesn't seem to be appropriate. Let me explain this to you. There's a lot of times where parents don't like the behavior of their kids and sometimes don't like what their kids are becoming, the people they're becoming. And they're not allowed to say that. Or it's, you know, someone has this idea that because you love your children, you're never supposed to have days when you're so angry with them, you don't like them very much. You understand? You don't like them very much because you know you put your hard-earned love and support into them to make them the best that they can be and protect them from everything and to defy you or to go do whatever it is that they feel that they know better now that they've got some hair on their chest and a couple of hormones popping out here and there. They'll walk out the door and say, really? Well, not only am I going to go against what you taught me and get myself in trouble, which, by the way, I'm going to come back to you to get bailed out from, but I'm going to make sure I stick it to you even harder with spite. And I'm going to make sure that I get myself in the most dangerous situation. And if you try to stop me or you try to give your motherly love or your fatherly discipline, I'm going to go right to ACS and I'm going to call them. Then here we go. And the government, it's not about the house all the time. I know that the first place, of course, that everybody is going to blame on these children is that it's their upbringing. Listen, there are plenty of serial killers that had no childhood issues and grew up to be killers for the fun of it. But that is what assessing the child's life is for, the child, the human, not looking for a place to peg them on some psychiatric name hook. They have these counselors looking for which pot to put this conversation in. Is it going to be the ADD pot, the bipolar pot, the aggression problem with sociopathic pot? Is it going to be the ADD pot? Is it going to be the depression pot? They're not sitting there looking at children to be human beings that are finding their way through a hormonal war plus a genetically enhanced addition, like, you know, the hormones on steroids. They're not looking to try to adjust to those changes that's happening. They're sitting up there simply saying, hey, there's a category with a name on it. You got to find what your symptoms are. Well, wait a minute. You're kind of exhibiting symptoms of this file and this file. Which one did I put you in? Well, that means that that's the one where, you know, now you get a drug to go with it. They're telling your kids, hey, when you go get your late pass at the front desk, do me a favor, look to the right and pick which color condom you'd like this week. Don't tell your parents. Don't even worry about it. Hey, daughter, go to the left and see which abortion clinic you'd like to go to without your parents' consent. Oh, but wait a minute. Make sure you go to a renowned doctor, because if that abortion goes bad and we leave a little bit behind and you can't conceive again, we can't fix you until your parents say so. And by the way, when all that screws up with your head, here's a drug you could take. So you can kill yourself in the end.
But, you know, there are so many types of evil in the world. You know, you can go on Well, we used to call it a party line. Now you got these telephone chat lines. You don't know if this is an adult or a child. A child can call up a telephone chat line, listen to all kinds of stuff. I mean, there are so many evils out there. You got to be on top of this child 24 hours a day.
And that's not possible. So what we're supposed to be doing, or what we're supposed to have the village to support and the fertile environment to do as parents and as village people, is to say, hey, I'm going to give you every bit of tool that I can give you for common sense, for safety, and then I'm going to give you some love, tough love, some little bit of discipline when needed, some more guidance with love when that's over, so that you can be fully prepared for any situation that you get yourself into when I'm not there to see you. There's no way anybody can watch their kid 24/7. No way. Even
well, you know what
I'm the most annoyingly overprotective parent. I can tell you that. In the beginning, I couldn't see my kids doing anything without making sure that there was some sort of protective factor in the process, you know, because of having lost a child before and having been through things in my own childhood. It was one of those things. I didn't smother them. I wasn't a helicopter mom, but I definitely was I said no a lot. For fear of, if you walk out there, what if somebody, you know, it was a lot of what ifs. Not realizing that you can have your kid in a sealed Fort Knox safe and they can find a way to bang their elbow and break a bone. And it was costing me more of not breathing than they were actually getting hurt. And I still tell you, that with all of that, I still wasn't able to watch them 24/7. So that's impossible.
Well, you don't have to watch them, but you always have to make sure of what they're doing. Because even when I grew up, as soon as I put my hand on the door, my mother used to say, "Where are you going?" And if I didn't answer her, she wouldn't let me out the door.
Yeah, that's me, and I agree with. You don't get to walk out the door, especially at a certain age, and not get permission and understanding from your parents. I'm not saying that. At a certain age, you better know where your kids are and who their friends are and who they're going to be with, you know, and what they're planning to do. Now, if they go to the store and they veer off on that thing, but they have the basics down, we're good. But at the end of the day, no way. We're just going back right now to the outside forces that are contributing to our kids' horrific states of mind right now while claiming to try to bring awareness and solutions to this very problem. And half of it isn't the exacerbated problem it would be if they hadn't put the wrong ingredients in the soup in the first place. Children are not allowed to be kids anymore because society is telling them there is no such thing as normal growing pain behavior and silly behavior that you're going to laugh about when you're out of high school and you look back and realize how stupid it was. My best friend came from me duking it out because she was a bully to a point for me. And we're the best of friends today because that's the culture we were raised in. Nowadays, you have a fight, fights don't end. Fights don't end. This kid had a fight with somebody in sixth grade and they saw them with their mother in the ninth grade and came back with their friends and shot them up. Fights don't end. Where do our innocent children come up with this extreme sense of vengeance, this extreme sense of violence, this extreme sense of hatred? It's not something that just happens with certain kids. There are some extreme injecting forces here. Terry, you still with me?
I'm right here listening.
Okay, and here's your turn to inject once again.
All right, listening to what you said, who do I want to go back to and say this starts with? It's two situations going on. One, we're at a different era. It's just simply a technological related era. All of our beautiful young people that are born into this era, they're more attached to the technological devices than they are human interaction. So that's where we really lost touch with our children. the drug companies, they've got involved in the process, and now they felt we can kind of stick our noses in. And when mm-hmm. children are behaving in a way that doesn't seem right, we can illegally market our powerful antipsychotic drugs to them, to the point where, you know, some have even been caught. I mean, there are drug companies that have paid out millions of dollars in damages because they mm-hmm. were legally caught illegally marketing their drugs to children. So what we're saying, or what I'm saying personally, and I've said it since I've been on the show last week and this week, I'm not a fan of pharmaceutical companies, because if they really, truly loved and cared about their fellow human beings, then the drugs that they're manufacturing would have helped resolve a lot of ills by now. But instead, we're getting worse as a people. We're getting sicker as a people. But they keep mm-hmm. manufacturing more and more drugs that they claim are going to help people. And again, you run out of adults because so many have died off from your drugs. And now you got to find a new target. So you're targeting children. And again, the children's problem is that, number one, you're not talking to your parents. You're not talking to the counselors. You're not going to boys and girls clubs or high wire day camps. You're not doing anything socially interactive to really be able to have someone talk to you, just simply talk to you. How much do I miss young people just who want to sit down and talk? You just don't have that anymore. Now it's, I just want to be on my device. So we've lost them. You know, you've literally lost an entire generation, because when you speak to them, they're quiet. They won't even answer you, or they'll give you, mm-hmm. But on social media, they're typing away like crazy. I don't understand how they can type that fast. I mean, the buttons are so tiny, I can't see them. But these kids are typing at 1,000 words a minute. But if you ask them a question, it takes 15 seconds to get an answer. So we're just, you know, we've lost our young people to a sense. And I would just hope, you know, somehow we get them back one day.
I have to laugh at that because I just had that situation with my daughter. I was like, I just finished sending you the message. How the hell did you reply that quickly? And I swear that this is what I hear through the house.
Yep.
I'm like, is that R2-D2?
As I'm telling you, really have to see what's going on with that. Now, that tells you that this is an entire generational gap that you're never going to recover from. Because back in our day, if you typed that fast, you were in school in typing class. And you were preparing to become a shorthand worker at a courtroom. Or you were getting ready to get a job. You weren't just typing, my friend's wearing blue, I'm wearing black to the concert, I don't like Prince, I blast such and such. It wasn't pointless. You know, but now the kids have this incredible talent to type, but they're not doing anything with the talent. You're just wasting away on social media. You know,
see,
so if you're going to be
that
good at typing.
On a laptop, I could do that. I could do my wonders. I got you on that.
These devices are so small. I am amazed. I'm telling you, I'm applauding them because I'm amazed that I don't see how they can hit those buttons and be that accurate when the buttons are so tiny. You can barely see them. But these kids are typing perfect messages. And as I said, when it comes down to actually having a physical interactive conversation, they can't have a conversation with, like, they don't know how to talk to you, but they're doing it perfectly on social media by typing. So that tells you that it's something where the world is coming to an end. Like, it's something wrong. Your children can type better than they can talk. So it's something missing here. It's something terribly wrong with this problem. And I don't see a way to fix it, because I know society is going to continue until God brings it to an end. But this generation we're in now, you put these drugs in these kids too early. You put the kids on social media where they're more in love with social media than actual social human interaction. And you got the problems that we got today.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it is freaky. It really very much so is freaky. And it's crazy, and it's backwards. And I'm telling you, like, there's times I'm looking at some of these kids in the park, and it looks like I'm looking at one of those post-apocalyptic type, you know, sci-fi movies. You know, I'm like, well, short of the, you know, remember the Terminator when she had the dream that the nuclear bomb went off and she was standing at the gate and the whole thing just blew her away. I don't know if you watched that, but Kevin, I'm sure you've seen the Terminator as well. It's like everything is just dust and ash and you know, nuclear disaster, you know? And I'm looking at them. I'm like, short of the dusty, rusted out, you know, park and the burnt down swings and stuff, this is pretty much the scene in that movie.
You know, I, look, we're
in that movie.
You know, Katie, we're supposed to be teaching, you know, children in their childhood years to learn how to handle unpleasant emotions. That's what we're supposed to do, whether you're a parent or you're a surrogate, like I've been like a parent figure to many. That's what my objective is as a grown adult man, is to help young people figure out, how do I deal with this emotion that it's not very pleasant to me? But if the child doesn't want to talk to me, or that device that they're on is more important to them than I am, then the connect is not going to be there. So no matter how much I want to give the child this 60 years of wisdom that I've attained, if the child would rather be on the device, you know, looking at something on TikTok, then the 60 years of wisdom can't be implanted into that child because the child isn't receptive to it. So there just has to be a way. You would hope that young people would somehow want to be off of those devices long enough to understand that I still need human interaction. I still have to learn how to actually talk about my issues and talk about my problems, especially the ones that are unpleasant, because those are the ones that are causing the suicidal thoughts. Those are the ones that are causing them to harm themselves. But if you don't talk to anybody about it, then you will never figure out by yourself how to resolve the issue, because if you could, then you wouldn't be facing the problem in the first place.
Absolutely. I do. Kevin, do you have any final evaluation? Only reason why, guys, I'm going to have to close down 15 minutes early today, but I wanted to let all of you know, like, this is a very passionate subject for me, period. The community contributions that I try to give back through this service, to this platform, the voice I try to be for those that don't have a voice out there, We're all still grown. You know, we're all grown people. We kind of walked it, and in our age, we've had the benefit of being the last raised by the village. But to see the way that our kids are being targeted, that they're lost and they're alone, and like you said, Terry, it's not that they don't have options. It's just that modern technology is being put in their hand and telling them, you don't need those options, but they clearly do. And I try to point this out to these kids. You know how they have these devices, and they dub them smartphones and smart devices. I have never seen smartphones or smart devices be so dumb. And this is where they don't get it. Like, for example, they have this wonderful feature called voice texting, where, you know, there's plenty of times I have my hand in water, so I feel great. I don't even have to type. I'll just, you know, voice type my message. And the problem is, if either the artificial intelligence doesn't recognize what you said or can't get your enunciation to their benefit or fine-tune it, or they don't understand the word that, a particular word is not in its dictionary, then it types what it feels like typing, and whatever you're saying looks like a mess. Their autocorrect on certain things is based on what they think is supposed to be the right word to say. And you're like, oh, well, then that's what it means. And then you wind up saying, get it to your teacher, and you're getting an F and don't know why. You know, Siri and Google Assistant is not a real person. You know, it's fun that you can put things in and Alexa can say certain things back, but it's what you put in that comes out. So your smart device is only as good as your smart. So I'm going to give Kevin and you your last round of remarks. Kevin, anything to say with regards to what we were speaking about today? Any last words?
No, but this is definitely a serious issue, because if this is what the generation is like now, God only knows what the generation after that will be like.
Yeah, it's not gonna get any better. If we don't start making changes now and stuff, it's just gonna be an ultimate deterioration in everything. Activities are already, you know, horribly limited. That I should say, productive activities. Half the people and half the heroes that we learned about, and half of the social studies and the history, this generation don't even know. I think Martin Luther King is about the only real black civil rights hero they know. These children don't know who Shirley Chisholm was, who Harriet Tubman was, you know, none of these things. Malcolm X, I think, only because Denzel played him. So many things. And, you know, it's funny because half their streets are named after people. You know, so if you don't have the interaction and the nurturing of people and interaction, you're not going to get the benefit of nurturing of the nature of nurturing. You're just not going to get it. So, Terry, let me give it to you since we're down to our last 10 minutes.
All right. I'm going to keep it real quick. You mentioned Shirley Chisholm, just a sidebar. You know, she actually made her bid to try to get on that presidential ballot back in 72 when I was at 9-year-old fourth grader, we're talking about. Isn't that something like we were mentioning?
Mm-hmm.
We were mentioning 9 years old. And like, well, that's the history that was taking place in the world when I was 9 years old. You know, this woman was running to try to see if she could get on the ballot to become president of the United States. And as you said, now all these years later, kids have no idea of who she was. But I was actually alive on earth and aware of who she was because I would see her on the news and see her in the paper and during her debates and things. And so it's amazing how far we've come from then to now. And technology has taken the place of us. It's taken the place of humans. Let me just say, inanimate does not equal smart. Human interaction equals smart. And the last thing is we really got to find a way to, no matter how tough it is, we got to find a way to help our young people to learn techniques to manage their emotions with actual human response rather than just feed them some drugs and hope that they figure it out.
Yeah, thank you. And every one of you are the most, you know, substantial panelists that, you know, Joe had to hang up early, but Joe, thank you for all that you've been coming through with, you know, in these past few segments and, you know, for feeling appreciated here or feeling like I'm doing something. Terry, as usual, here and wherever you are around the world, you know, you give as good as you get and sometimes more than you get. So I appreciate that and everything that you add to this. Kevin, as always, you know, you're very passionate and you go around and you do what you have to do for people. You're one of the most biggest humanists I know. And I appreciate, you know, you being a part of my life and friendship-wise and everything. But to my listeners, I have got to tell you, we're going to be moving in some big new directions. We're really working on some, you know, active sponsorships that we're going to be going in. The Jumpstart internship is going to be back up and running. You'll be hearing about that in a bit. We are looking for some young kids to get the opportunity to build a website for us. We want a new website. What we want to do is take that website design that you do, publish it, you know, as active, and then we want to be able to allow you to have some real live portfolio experience so that when you get through the rest of your educational journey, when you actually get out there in the world, you'll have more than just internship hours. You're going to have some real live portfolio contributions to show. A graphic artist company, an illustration company, a website design company to say that, yes, I actually have live running work with a corporation or with a company. That's some of the things we're going to do because I went to college late. And I understood that after all those long classes and making the dean's list because I worked twice as hard, I still needed 300 hours of internship in order for me to be able to walk down the aisle. And then I did it. But after you did it, then what? You were able to say, well, yep, I reported to internship every day. And when I went out in the world, what did I have to show for it? So that's the one thing that we want to change here. We want to make you getting experience in life to be really applicable to what you're going to be when you get out there and have something to show for it, for your pride and for your resume. So as we continue to build this up together, you guys will be getting it. Now, as for Wednesday's topic, we're going to start a little two-part relationship series. And what we're going to be speaking about is the things that happen in relationship. Is your partner acting on expectation or out of respect. You'll hear more about that as we go. Pre-topic, pre-broadcast topic question will be posted. You guys, I'm looking forward to your feedback. Thank you all for coming. Until Wednesday night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing. In the meantime, please, those of us that can, let's try to grab a kid and talk to a kid and help steer a kid through conflict resolution rather than allowing them to get it and popping a pill in their head. That's not helping. So until Wednesday night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, and thank you for being here.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.